two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, are you ready to add a sprinkle of joy to your day? Then you need to check out Add to Cart. Hi, I'm Sujan Pak.
And I'm Kulap Vilaysack. We're your hosts, and on this show, we talk about the things we buy, the things we buy into, and what it says about who we are.
That's right. Each week, we're going to have some honest and maybe, you know, a little TMI conversations about all the fabulous, weird, wonderful things we're adding to or ditching from our carts. You know, we talk about beauty products, latest health trends, philosophies we're passionate about. Nothing is off limits on this podcast.
We're diving deep into everything we and our guests buy into and exploring what it reveals about who we truly are. We're going to decide what's worth the investment, be it money or emotions.
Add to Cart from Lemonada Media has new episodes out on Tuesdays, wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Okay, actually, can you just pretend that you're listening to a fully complete theme song here? I got really in my head, and I tried to make it perfect, and I couldn't. So this is going to be the theme song right here. Hello, and welcome to Funny 'Cause It's True. I'm Elise Myers. When I first saw Nate Bargatze's special, The Tennessee Kid, in 2018 on Netflix, I would specifically invite people over to my house just to force them to watch it. I would sit them down on my couch, and then I would watch them watch the special because it was so funny. Like, if they started talking, I would just be like, shut up, you're missing it, shut up. Everyone thought it was great, but I had this very deep connection to Tennessee Kid, and it honestly, like, kind of made me think, even subconsciously, I don't know, I could probably do this. And that's something I'd never really felt before. Like, I could do that because he made his comedy feel so plain in a way. Like, the way he talks is so simple. It's not overdramatic. It's not a lot of physical comedy. It's not like fancy writing. It's just, you kind of feel like you're in his living room and he's telling you a story about his life. And that's what I want to do in my comedy. And so I wanted everyone to have a chance to experience that and enjoy it as much as I did. So fast forward to now, he's on my podcast. Nate Bargatze is on my podcast. His 2021 Netflix special, The Greatest Average American, was nominated for a Grammy, and he's continued to be very hard at work. He just released his latest special titled Hello World in January, and he's currently on the Be Funny tour. No pressure. And because I love Nate's comedy so much, we really dive into just all things comedy here. So two things that are funny because they're true. Number one, you won't hear it in the conversation because we cleaned it up, but there was a lag between Nate and I that was so painful. It resulted in me kind of pouring my heart out at the end of the conversation and just telling him what his comedy means to me and it being met with a very silent smile. And I have never wanted to take something back so badly in my life, and so immediately after saying it. But it actually was just the lag. And he saved me shortly after that by repaying my compliment with a compliment of his own, thankfully. And number two, because I've consumed pretty much everything there is to consume when it comes to the content that, like, Nate has put out, I already knew this, but my producers were just learning that Nate's dad was a clown when Nate was growing up. And when I logged in the day of the interview, I saw my prep doc for this conversation, and it was full of clown questions. And I mentioned it once in the interview, and Nate, like, briefly touched on the clown stuff, and I just kept going. And then I look over in the chat bar, and my producers are just sending me a million messages like, ask more about the dad being a clown. We need to know more about the clown stuff. And I just messaged back, I am not asking about the clown stuff. Enough about the clown stuff. So, any hoops, enough about that. Let's get into it. Nate, hi. How are you? How is your day going?
I'm good. It's going good.
So I have so many things to ask you about. So I'm just going to dive right in. How did you make the decision early on to start with clean comedy? Were you like, this is going to be me from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up South, Southern Christian, so it's like we were only allowed to watch clean comedy, and it's all I ever knew. But I also couldn't imagine, like, cursing in front of my parents, like, even now, even still to this, it's like I'm just...
I'm the same way.
So as soon as he said, like, I couldn't imagine cussing in front of my parents, my immediate thought was, like, I'm going to be funny and say, I'm the same fucking way, to, like, make a joke. And then I realized he has no clue who I am and definitely wouldn't know that that's a joke. And so as I started to say it, I, like, took a very hard left out of the joke. And I just ended up saying, yeah, I'm the same way, totally. And I am so glad, listening back to this, that I did not make that joke. So I'll just make it to you, I guess.
I do everything just to kind of make them not be mad. Like, you know, I want them, it's nice that you want, and you know what's helped a lot is if I write jokes, it's with that in mind. It's, you're writing very specifically for someone.
I write for my grandma. She watches everything I film and post and write. And the thought of explaining, like, a random F-bomb to my grandma isn't really something I feel like doing when I go home for Christmas. But I did just drop an F-bomb like a second ago. So, sorry, grandma.
Instead of trying to write for everybody, which is kind of impossible, it's like I'm writing for myself, but I'm also writing because I don't want my parents... You know, you don't want them to be like, check out my son. It's like, it's a little dirty. You know, like they have to be like embarrassed. And I have all my friends that are some of the dirtiest comics. And I always joke that I'm a comics parents comic because I'm always the one that, like, all my buddies are like, they would be like, tell their parents if they're dirty, like, go watch Nate. You can watch Nate. He's fine. Yeah.
That's my experience. So anytime someone comes up to me in public, everyone's like, me and my mom love watching you. And I'm like, that is not what I expected you to say. And it's always, I expect people my age to come up to me, and it's usually people like 20, 30 years older than I am, being able to connect to all of the generations. It's like, it's really fun, but it does change the way I tell stories, because I'm the same way. Like, I'm imagining cussing in front of my parents just does not compute to me. Like, I could never do that. And so it really has informed the way I tell a story online.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's, especially now when you look at stuff, is bringing those generations together to watch things. Like, a lot of viewing and a lot of things, it's all separated. You know, like, my wife has shows, or I have shows, or our daughter has shows. You're not watching stuff together. And, like, when I have grandmothers come up, there's nothing better than making a grandmother proud of you. Not even my grandmother, just any grandmother.
That's the best.
It's the best.
We do it for the grandmas.
But you can have a 10-year-old to a grandparent, and they can all just sit there. And it's, you know, it's something that I think people want to do stuff with their family. And and so, and you don't want to be uncomfortable with your parents, and you don't want to sit there and watch something that's like, you know, it's not, it makes it not fun.
What do you think people expect when they come to your show? Like, what in your mind, you're like, this is what they're expecting?
You know, my act is, it's, nothing's really heavy, or nothing's really, it's like, I'm just trying to be a break and just to give people some relief and not have to worry about the life or their own things. You know, people have to get their kids to school and run and all these kind of, it's a zoo. So you just want to be that break for them and to be fun, which is a very broad thing to try to be.
Because it means so many different things to different people too, I'm sure. Like, people's senses of humor vary so much. So I feel like that would be nerve-wracking to be like, I find this funny. Yeah. I hope you do.
Yeah. You know, you figure out what your lane is. That's a hard part to do too. When you're coming up and you're seeing, like, I would see people like talking about just topical stuff, and then they start blowing up and you're like, do I need to do that? And it's hard to just remind yourself to, like, just, like, keep your head down, just do what you do. And then the rest will, you know, it comes when it comes.
I think the first thing I noticed about your comedy is, like, there are so many jokes that to the audience feel like a throwaway, and the throwaways are just as funny as the, like, intentional, like, laugh. And it's like the thing that I could not get over was from your special Tennessee Kid, when you were talking about the horse.
So me and my buddy, we rented a car. He's driving. On the way out there, I see a dead horse just laid out in this guy's yard. And I've never seen that before. And I was like, man, I bet you don't think about that when you buy a horse. it dying. You know, what do you do? That's a huge thing dying in your yard. You can't just scoot it off into the woods with your foot and try to get another one that matches before the kids come home. On the way back, since my buddy was driving, he did not see the dead horse, you know? And I'm like, we can't not see it. So it's just one road. And I was like, I'll just show you where it's at. So we're driving, and we get to it. I was like, it's right here. And I pointed, and the horse was standing up, doing unbelievable. One of the healthier horses that I've ever seen.
When you were like, he was doing incredibly well. Yeah. Like, that line, I have, like, that part was like, he is a genius. Just the way that you tell a story, and, like, that wasn't even the funny part. And, like, you just have a very special way of, like, speaking and connecting to the audience, and it feels, like, relatable and, like, common experiences, and that's the kind of thing that makes people feel like you're reading their minds.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can really, like, write to be relatable. You can really just talk about yourself. Yeah. So I did learn very early on that it's like, it's just gotta be you. And so whatever you are and what you do is what you have to be. And it's when you try not to do that is when stuff doesn't go great. And when people can't relate to it. And so, like, when I write jokes, I'm going through my experiences in my life. I always look at, you can either laugh with me or laugh at me. And it doesn't matter, as long as you're laughing.
I would like you to laugh with me, personally. If you do laugh at me, I will cry. Thank you. Have you ever tried to veer out of your lane and you were like, oop, never mind? Like, or have you just kind of been, you've known what you were doing this whole time?
I remember following a comic, Rory Scovel, who I'm friends with. But Rory's very funny and very, like, animated. And I remember I followed him, and I kind of tried to also make fun of, like, being that kind of vain, making fun of the situation in the room, and I bombed real hard. And it was like that moment to go, like, oh, like, I don't need to match people's, like, I'm not that, I don't know how to do that. And that was something you'd have to learn in New York, is you're like following a high energy guy, and you think, well, I that's what they like now, so I got to be this. And what I learned was to get people in my voice. What's the quickest way I can get you to my voice? If I can get you to come to me instead of me trying to come to you, the show will be better. Yeah. So you have to learn how to, like, let me just get you to me, and then, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the way I feel is, like, I'm just wanting to offer an opportunity for me to be my complete self in front of you. And if you relate to that, and if you love it and you think it's funny, awesome. Like, that's the easiest way for me to kind of do what I do and stay healthy. I can only be myself. In the moment I try and say things like somebody else, or tell a story like somebody else, or animate like somebody else, it doesn't feel like myself. And you can do it, like, once or twice, but you can't, like, sustain it. And so it's hard to stay healthy in that. I think that's another way to burn out too. And I am curious if, like, with this stretch of, like, 8 years that you've just been going hard, like, are you finding that, like, the comedy and the way that you stay authentic to yourself, does that help you stay in it longer? And does that help you stay healthy in your career and balancing family and work? Like, do you notice that that helps?
Yeah. I mean, being yourself it's not an act. When you're an act, that's exhausting.
This is true in life as well.
So if the more you can be closer to you, the easier it's going to be. You know, a big part is, like, being on. So that's the only part that gets hard, is, like, you got to learn with, like, you know, how much you feel like you have to be on. The on is not, it's not just on stage. It's like when you meet someone, like, or if you.
All the time.
Yeah, you're just kind of always on. And
you're aware that, like, they're seeing you for the first time and they're meeting you, and you are Nate Bargatze, and you want to be Nate Bargatze. Yeah. You don't want to be just, like, there.
That's why being the great default is just be a nice person. And if you can be nice, that's what, you know, and that's in general life. As long as you're nice and not faking nice, then that helps a lot with the being on. All that stuff helps too for your act, like being, like, yeah, you don't live in, like, L.A. or something, right? Like,
I live in Omaha, Nebraska.
Omaha. Yeah, that's right. And then, but it's like that is the, honestly, one of the best things you could do, because you are at least living a normal life, and you know, I always say you got to have normal people in your life. Like, when you live this, when you get to a certain point, it's like, you know, a lot of people, and a lot of people are famous or they're whatever, and they're doing crazy things, and they're, people are like going to Mexico on a Tuesday for no reason. And you need someone that's like, yo, dude, I gotta go pick my kids up from school, yeah. Like, or I'm working.
I can't tell you how many times I have said to my husband, I'm so grateful that all of this like public recognition came into our lives after I became a mom, because there is nothing more humbling than leaving like this event where everyone knows your name, going home, and then changing a poopy diaper and having your son have a full meltdown for like an hour just at you. Like, that will bring you back down to reality faster than any amount of therapy.
You gotta, like, so you're at least aware of the reality that you're, then you can appreciate where you're at, but then you can also appreciate where they're at, and then also remind yourself that, you know, yeah, this is insane.
Okay, we gotta take a quick break, but when we come back, Nate talks about when he started off his comedy career in New York and LA.
You've likely encountered countless astrology stereotypes or hundreds of astrology memes saturating social media, but have you ever pondered what's beyond the surface? There's a new podcast we want to recommend called Stars and Stars with Issa. In each episode, astrologer Issa Nakazawa sits down with the biggest stars of our time, uncovering surprising insights hidden within their birth charts while shedding light on their life paths and purposes. Hear what the stars and cosmos have to say about guests like W. Kamau Bell, Aja Monet, Gia Tolentino, Umi, and more. You'll laugh, cry, and come away with insights about your own life you never imagined. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
So have you ever lived anywhere else other than Tennessee? Because you guys are in Tennessee right now, right?
Yeah, I lived in Chicago. I started in Chicago, and then I was in New York for almost 9 years and LA for two.
Were you in New York to like start comedy, or when was that time period?
Yeah, I moved to Chicago first.
Okay.
And I started there for, I was there about a year and a half. I was there with like Hannibal Buress and Pete Holmes.
Wow.
And Kumail Nanjiani, TJ Miller. So a lot of that crew. And then I moved to New York after that to start comedy. I watched his documentary with Seinfeld called Comedian. It's on Netflix, but like that came out and he was in New York, and then that's when I knew to move to New York. And New York was very much that you could go on stage every night, multiple times a night, because there's so many comedy clubs. And so you're just like, you're just in it, just going up and pounding, and, you know.
Were you going to say pounding the rock just now or no?
I was going to say pounding it out.
Oh.
But then I was like, I don't know if that made sense.
This right here, this is where I should have stopped. Pounding the rock is a saying from the Spurs. I don't know if you follow the Spurs at all, basketball. Yeah, it's a motivational saying. Like,
oh my God, Elise, stop talking. Just stop. Stop it. Bring it down. He wasn't going to say pounding the rock, so why are you going into the history of this saying?
I think that makes sense.
Just yeah.
Full Greg Popovich. Makes sense. It's a, yeah, the owner. I think it was
this is too much information to unload on a stranger. It's not necessary.
They don't choose stars. Like, you know, it's like a, everybody is their own part. That they
bring
play.
It back. Really bring it, bring that. It back.
I really love the Spurs.
I'm doubling for, like, down. I'm doubling person, down. That's good. That makes sense.
So I want to model the way I run a business that way. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a, I mean, when you hear little things that you can gather that can affect your, my big one that I talk about, there's a book by Jerry Weintraub. He produced Ocean's 11, Ocean's 13, like big Hollywood dude, like all this stuff. But yeah, when I read his book, he said anytime he started feeling comfortable, it was time to make a change.
Hmm.
And I moved from New York to LA within 3 months of reading that. Because it was...
Really?
That made the most sense to me. The second you start feeling comfortable, it's easy to just kind of stick in that comfortableness. especially in a field that we are in where it's like, oh, if I stay here, you know, I'm going to get stuck. And then I could still be doing comedy full time, but like next thing you know, I will be 50 or 60 and I'm just kind of where I've been. And so it was like, I knew I needed to mix it up. And then that's when, yeah, I moved to LA and went to like kind of newer comedy scene. And I remember one night I was supposed to do a show and I was supposed to open for Bill Burr somewhere in LA and he canceled. And so it was getting rescheduled. And then I went and did like an open mic and it was like a Friday. And I was like, had like almost like a panic, you know, like it was like, what am I doing, dude? I'm just sitting here like, you know, it felt very much like my career's in other people's hands and not mine. And so it was like from that moment, it was like, I got to go out every night. I got to get that grind back that I had in New York.
Just got to pound the rock. Am I right?
So I like when you get stuff from random things that resonate.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I got to go. I got to get it together.
When you moved from New York to LA, when you were in New York, you were doing shows like every night, you said, right? And then when you moved to LA, like, you were still doing shows every night? Like, did that grind ever get tiring? Like, did you have a family at that point?
Yeah, our daughter was just born, so she was probably about 4 months old when we moved to LA. I mean, it gets tiring, but it's like I'm trying to, you know, win the lottery.
Yeah.
So it's like no one cares that I'm doing this. No one needs me to do this. I mean, like, I could want to do it. I could want all these things. But if I quit tomorrow, like, you know, I'm still just like, people live their lives and they're going to go on. Like, it's so you got to like go grind it out or someone else will. And the second you don't, someone else is doing it.
I couldn't imagine creating a set, memorizing it, performing it for people, getting that immediate feedback and doing that all in real time and then getting a different experience the next time you do it. And so I wanted to know, like, how do you get your sets to a point where you're writing them, you feel comfortable to perform them? Like, I guess, what does that process look like for you? Because it feels so intimidating to someone like me.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you do is intimidating to me. And I do the same thing that you would do. Is like, I'm sure if you tell something, it's not always going to come off great the first time.
You would not believe the sheer number of drafts I have saved in my phone that will never see the light of day.
And then you keep messing with it or you change some stuff. But with a live audience, you get an immediate reaction.
Yeah.
So you do know if something's going to be good. And now I give myself a lot of outs. If I have a story that's long and I don't know how it's going to go, I make sure I can get out of it.
Do you plan that into the story?
Yeah, you just have pockets that you're like, this, I've told the story long enough and I don't, you know, it's not, I don't ever try to be too far from a laugh either. That's my big thing. So the farther you are from a laugh, the bigger the laugh has to be. So I never want to put too much pressure on one laugh. And so if you have a long thing of silence, because you're setting up something, well, that payoff needs to be, and it's like, how big do you want that payoff to be? Like, it can't be that crazy.
Yeah. It's probably like a cap. Like, it only can be so much of a laugh, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And so then I'm like, all right, well, I'll just tell these beats of it. Or, you know, the crowd's not going with the whole thing, so I'll just get out.
Is your plan to, like, tell a story? So you're like, do you have, like, a beginning and an end in mind, and then you fill the rest in? Like, or how do you navigate through a whole set?
When I first go out, it's like trying to get a quick laugh, like trying to like just set the tone, like that can kind of be about whatever. And then it's, I can talk about me, then I talk, like this last special, like I talk about me being dumb and then growing up and then my family and then our daughter and then my wife. And so it all kind of goes, and that helps you remember it because you're kind of like, well, the only thing that would make sense to go after this is this.
I
talk about my daughter. Well, the only thing that makes sense is to talk about my wife after that. Someone might look at something as like, well, that 10-minute thing was a story. And I look at it as like 30 jokes that I just have combined them into something like that.
And then speaking of your family, I wanted to ask you about your parents. I know you've like shared jokes and talked a little bit about how your dad was a clown. And my team was like, his dad was a clown?
Yeah.
I was like, it's a whole thing. Like, and I'm really curious if that's kind of what made you want to go into comedy.
Yeah. You know, when I said I wanted to do comedy, I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal. Like, I know a lot of parents are like, what is this? I mean, mine, they almost expected it. They're like, yeah, someone's going to do something weird.
They're like, I would hope so.
Yeah, yeah. If I'd have said, like, I'm an accountant, they'd have been like, all right.
We're so disappointed in you. Yes. How dare you throw your life off track like that?
Yeah.
It's funny because your dad was like a clown and then a magician. And he's a motivational speaker. Does he do all three still?
He's not a clown anymore, but he does magic.
Obviously a magician, duh.
He does his motivational. He did a lot of motivational speaking in high schools. That was kind of his day job for like the past 20 or so years. And he just retired from that. So now he comes out with me a lot more. And so when he goes out, I mean, he destroys. Like, people love it. He's very sweet. And when he brings me on stage too, he always gets emotional. And yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like your family would be so proud of you. It's like, yeah. you've done so much to this last 8 years. It just feels like you've kind of gone nonstop. Like, does this feel surreal that you're here?
Oh, yeah. It feels, it's more than you could have dreamed of, you know?
Yeah.
You have these dreams in your head, but they're just dreams. Like, you're like, why would I be the one that gets to do this kind of stuff? That's a big, I try to work on that, to appreciate. You do appreciate it when you're in it, because it's I've been along for the ride the whole time, but it's like trying to remind yourself that, like, I'm not better than anybody. It's like, I'm just out here just trying to be entertaining and trying to do this kind of stuff. But it's very surreal.
We have to take one more break, but when we come back, we talk about how Nate's Grammy nomination has impacted his approach to comedy.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And each week we are sitting down to talk all about life's twists, turns, and absurdities on The Deep Dive.
From exploring the depths of TikTok, which is our only news source, to navigating the complexities of grief and loss, we are just two best friends behind a mic processing life together.
This podcast is all about finding the silver linings in the madness. So get ready for unfiltered conversations about motherhood, careers, pop culture, and everything in between.
Here at The Deep Dive, we're all about community. We believe in the power of sharing experiences and the strength that comes from supporting one another. And we would love to have you with us.
So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't get enough of your favorite Lemonada Media podcasts? By subscribing to Lemonada Premium today, you'll gain access to fun and inspiring bonus content from all of our podcasts across the Lemonada Media Network. As a subscriber, you can listen to never-before-heard interview excerpts, behind-the-scenes segments, and continue to uncover new ways to make life suck less through all of our exclusive subscriber audio. Check out a free trial of Lemonada Premium today in the Apple Podcast app by clicking on our podcast logo and then the subscribe button.
I know you were just nominated for a Grammy.
Yeah.
Do you feel like now that's happened, do you feel the pressure to be funnier? Or are you just like, well, it happened and I'm just going to keep being myself?
No, I mean, it's like, you know, I want the next one to be nominated too. I definitely, you know, would be hurt if it's not. But I'm sure I can make up something in my head why I'm like, well, it doesn't matter. You know, it's like, but you do want it to. I want the shows to be good. I like when people come watch shows is like, there's a expectation. And so I want to be better, as good as I can. And like, and then also give what they're expecting to see, especially this between this tour and the last tour with this special is people coming to shows. And I mean, they just know your act. They know your whole act. And so you've got to come up with new material. And I had to do it on such a short turnaround that that's hard. You know, it all goes to like, it's hard, but it's also like, you know, I'm doing this job. So it's like, you try not to complain.
Now that you're doing like so much that's like self-activated, do you feel like your career is more in your own hands instead of like waiting for people to give you opportunity?
Now, very much so. And now I know it's off what I make. And so it's, you know, you have an audience that comes out and that watches, and you know, I don't know if you ever feel like you feel like you're nobody, it could go away. I think I know I have way more control over it now, though. But it's, I'm still scared to, like, I don't want to say no to stuff. I tour a lot right now, but I'd be nervous to take time off because you're like, well, everybody might forget about you or whatever. And
you don't want to be forgotten.
Yeah. I think you got to just naturally let that, this is my hope, is that there's a time that you do feel comfortable enough to know to take time off, that you know you can. And you got to just trust when you know it. You got to go, I'm okay. I can take time off. Because look, like, there's stuff that I say no to now that I would have begged for 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. But I'm comfortable to say no to it now. And I'm not saying no because whatever reason, but it just could be like, I don't have, it's really time for that now. And like, I don't think I'm going to set myself backwards and I feel okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to say no to this. And then, you know, but the rest of it, I'll say yes to, you know.
I've talked to so many comedians that had to take a break at some point in their career, whether it was just because of like family or like mental health. And the thing that they keep saying is like, I didn't want to take that break. I had to, and I was afraid I was going to be forgotten. And when I came back, I wasn't. And it was like that like falling back in love with coming back and falling back in love with what you do, like your comedy and this gift and this like skill you have, like the break sometimes can feel necessary, but also like it makes you fall back in love with it and it gives you so much more energy. And I think that so many, just not even comedians, like creative people that, their work is like the next thing that they create is the important thing. And like, they want to make it better than the last, like that fear of becoming irrelevant is a great driver in your career. And also it can kind of be debilitating because it feels like what you produce is more important than you. I'm struggling with that because the life cycle of what I create is so short. It's not a Netflix special that can live for 3 years and people are still talking about it. It's like a video I make and then tomorrow it has to be a new video. And that can be scary because I feel like I can never stop. And I've had to just really challenge that mindset of like, if I walked away right now, I could go back to web development, which is what I did before. Like, would this be enough for me? And would I be proud of what I've done? Yeah, I would be. And I can just imagine like in your career, like feeling that pressure of always having to make the next big thing and getting a Grammy. And then I got a Grammy and I want to do another one. Like, do you see yourself ever taking like years of a break or not really?
I think about like, so after like this tour I'm going to be doing now, like the next special I tape, I think I will put in time to be like, I need time off, like to go live life and like do whatever.
Sure.
Sometimes you got to prepare yourself to be like, all right, this is what it is. It's going to be a 3 week run. This is the life I want. This is the life you're asking for. Like, and you just kind of go, all right. So you learn what you don't and what you don't need. And like, but then you want to be like eventually where you could be like Adam Sandler, where his publicist is just telling people no. So I look at a lot of it is like, you want to get to that level that you can say no. And like, you can do that stuff. Yeah. And then people understand it. So like, part of it is your drive is to get to that point of the break. So it's not about the break. It's about like, how do I build myself up enough that like,
It just sustains itself.
Yeah, your break is your break because you're like, you don't have to worry about that break anymore. Like, either get help or you learn what's the important part.
What's worth doing and not.
Yeah, what's worth doing and what's worth not doing.
Genius. I'm just taking all the notes.
Yeah.
If you have time, I have 5 like rapid fire questions. Yep. I like to ask everybody at the end. Is that okay?
Yeah, love it.
So number one, what's the most embarrassing or funniest encounter you've ever had with a famous person?
One was... this guy, Mark Walter, he owns the Dodgers, so he's a billionaire. I don't, like, know. It was, perfect. Like, just, yes. This is, I'm not trying to be, you know, it was just in the situation that I did a
Listen,
show.
I have friends with, I'm friends with billionaires.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I don't know what to do. I go, he gave me $1 billion for no reason. And I go, come on.
It's fine.
I go, dude.
It's fine.
I go, I'm a regular guy. I go, no, but it was, like, talking to him, I was talking about, I'm a big Vanderbilt fan. I did not go to Vanderbilt's college, but I'm a big Vanderbilt fan. So Northwestern University is very similar to Vanderbilt, being a very smart school that at one point did not have great sports. but they have a great football team now. And so I was like with him, and I'm like talking about I'm talking about Vanderbilt. And I was like, you know, I see Northwestern, like they added a bunch of new stuff to their school, whatever. I was like, have you seen Northwestern's new sports facilities? And then I found out it's his name. They're named after him. He went to Northwestern. And he was like, yeah, I have seen them.
Did you find out in that moment later?
No, in the moment I found out that he did know what I was talking about. And I was like, oh, all right.
Number two, what was your first job?
I worked at Opryland Theme Park. So Nashville used to have a theme park.
Yeah.
And I worked there. And I swept up, and then I got a uniform. My name was on the tag. Like, it was very fun. And my dad did magic shows at Opryland. So I also worked in the dog kennel, and so they just had them in like the cages, like, you know, like a dog crate, and people could bring any pet. People had chickens. That people bring like just whatever animal they, you know.
Are they just out and about with their animals? I don't understand.
Yeah, they'd be traveling with their animals. And this was like, you know, this is, I mean, so it's got to be like the early 90s. Like, you know, it's not as much as people travel with animals now a lot. But back then it wasn't as much. But but then you're also people bring weird animals.
Chickens.
Chicken. They got a chicken. Where are you going to put the chicken? Can't leave it in the car. So they're,
it's true.
I remember we had one dog, and you'd have these locks, these S clips, and you'd put them in the thing and it locks the cage. Well, we were one short and someone brought a dog, and you're just kind of like trying to guess which dog won't like figure it out. And I guessed wrong. And the dog, and I remember I just was sitting there, like, you know, I'm like 15 and just sitting behind the counter, and I just see a blur.
No.
And this dog just takes off in this parking lot. So then you got to call the people and be like, who has a dog? Like, you know,
you're like, but honestly, why is this dog at this park anyways? So let's ask those questions. Like,
shouldn't have been there. Shouldn't have been there.
If you bring him out of your house, you should expect that there's a chance you could lose it. Yeah. It's all good.
I remember just saying, like, they didn't have enough S clips. I just said that a bunch to like the people because they're like, and no one knows.
As if they would be like, oh, okay. That makes sense. What is your go-to meal right now?
A good breakfast one that I go to is turkey white cheddar at Starbucks. It's just very easy to get. I love a number one Big Mac, no onions. And I also get a little filet of fish, little side sandwich, you know.
Just little side sandwich like to your sandwich.
Act like it's for someone else, you know. Like there's someone in the back.
On the phone, like, what did you want? Yeah. Filet of fish, thanks. Oh,
there's so many room services where they are like, so dining for two? And I'm like, sure.
Yep.
Whatever you think.
You got it.
They're like, it has to be two.
I feel like when you're on the road, though, you're only really eating out. If you're traveling so much, you'd have to find ways that you make it work on the road.
Yeah. It's brutal. I mean, that's the part that gets tiring. What you put in your body matters. I don't want to put anything good in my body. I want everything that's bad. And but it absolutely affects everything. It affects your mood. It affects everything. Water. You got to drink a bunch of water. And I mean, I could go.
Especially when you're traveling.
Oh, and I could not drink water for a month. I'd be fine with it.
Really?
Easily. I would love not drink water.
Just get one of those like Camelbacks.
Yeah.
So it's just like all the way underneath you're like, is your back okay?
Yeah.
You're like, it's fine.
Just drinking water.
I'm a camel. When I travel for work, I always pace myself. So I eat super well the entire time I'm gone, just so that I have the energy to get up in the morning from a bed that's not mine. And like, then I always plan like the night before I go home, if I'm gone for like a week, I will like save it all to the last night. But then I always hate it. I'm like, why did I do this? Because then I have to wake up and fly, and you fly feeling like absolute garbage.
Yeah.
And you're like, this was a mistake. But I do it every time. I'm just like, I'm never going to learn from my mistakes. And I think that's okay with me. I'm all right with it.
It's you got a little goal at the end. You got a little, like
it's the reward.
Cherry on top. Like, and you need to kind of, if you don't eat bad, you kind of need to do it alone. Like, you don't want your like family to see it. Like you're.
I only do it with people. I think if I do it alone, that's when I go too hard. Because I will go to the point where I'm like, I think I'm not okay. I think I'm going to pass out. But when I'm with people, it's like celebratory.
Yeah, it's like you're all part of it. I've eaten. I like to do it alone. Like it's like I've said it before. Like I do I can use enough ketchup where people are like, it's a lot of ketchup. Like they say it to me. Like they have to. It's so much that they go, oh, I feel like I should say something.
If I don't say something, it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that's if fair. I can be alone, I can do it. I'll eat fast food too sometimes. I could eat it at home and I eat it in my car and get rid of it so my wife doesn't know.
Wow.
You know? So
it's a whole thing. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. It's dedication. Also, I'll say it and then we can move on. But after having a kid, eating around your kid something delicious doesn't feel fun because they just like kind of are like loud the whole time and want it. And yeah. So anytime I have something fun to eat, I save it till I'm away from him. You're going to ruin this for me. I love you so much and I gave you life. But also like I just want to go eat my Kit Kat alone and not have to share it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Last thing you Googled on your phone, I guess you can't look it up.
I was going to watch this movie Rogue Agent. I think it's called Rogue Agent. I don't know what it is. I'm just trying to find something. And
something to put on.
Yeah, and I looked to see what if people said it was good or not. Not that that would even
determine. I never trust it.
Yeah, I don't either. Like, you get a gauge, like, to see. Because there's a lot of times it'll be, like, terrible. And I'm like, that's maybe my favorite movie I've ever seen.
Best movie I've ever seen. It's always wrong.
I'm scared to tell people what movies I like. Because I'm not... Some of them, I'm like, I don't know. My favorite movie is Scream, because when it came out when I was in high school. Yeah. And so, like, I loved it. And so it's like, and there's a lot of real movies that I haven't seen that people are like, how have you not seen this? And
I think I picked A Walk to Remember to be my favorite movie, I think, at, like, 7. Like, a girl dies from cancer. And, like, that's, like, my favorite movie, apparently. And I haven't even seen it since I was 7. And I just say that's my favorite movie. So, yeah, I'm not good at movies. I love shows because they're short. I'm like, I can handle that. My attention span.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Last thing. What do you know more about than you should?
I mean, golf, I guess. I don't know if that's... That's a good one.
That works.
Vanderbilt sports. I mean, no one knows really anything about Vanderbilt sports.
Their facilities.
Their facilities. I know a lot about McDonald's.
Oh, really?
I know a lot about fast food. I got a pretty good gauge of when, you know, like baby, when the rib sandwich, McRib comes back. I would always have I could feel like it's about, I mean, now they're trying to just, it's on the menu, I think, all the time now. But I'm way more aware of like soft drinks that are going on, like what's in the soft drink world. Dr. Pepper has zero cherry Dr. Pepper. It's like Dr. Pepper's really doing some pretty special things right now. And so I know a lot about that kind of stuff.
Have you tried their diet vanilla cherry Dr. food. Pepper? Have you tried that?
I've had the vanilla and I haven't had the vanilla cherry. So yeah.
It's
and I wouldn't think I would like it. And then, And you went and it comes where you're like, I don't know. You know, if someone was going to hand it to you, because a lot of the soft drinks, you think someone's going to, you know, they offer it to you. You're like, I don't know. I'm not going to like that. It's like too much. And then you have it, you're like, it's pretty.
I'm going to have this every day now for the rest of my life.
Yeah, yeah.
I always appreciate when people have the fridges with all the drinks in them. And like, how do you get that kind of money to like, just in case someone wants it? I don't even want it, but just in case they come over and they want this.
If someone doesn't have
this.
Yeah, I bring soda with me if I go somewhere.
Really?
Because you got to, sometimes these people, you go there and you're like, you have a Diet Coke. And then they're like, we don't drink Coke. And you're like, what? You're like, it's like, are you out of your mind?
My day is ruined. Yeah, you're like, what kind of sociopath are you?
And the whole time I will just be like, I wish I had a Diet Pepsi. Right?
Like that's, they make you this whole meal. You're like, you know what would make this better? Soda.
I can't believe you don't have it to offer. How do you not just have it to, you're having guests over.
Just in case. Just,
maybe one guy drinks Diet Coke. Maybe he's not going to go drink a 40-gallon bottle of wine. Maybe he would like just an off chance, you know, or they're like, we only have regular Coke. And you're like, I mean, I don't know if anybody's even drinking regular Coke anymore. It's all diet now.
I didn't even know they still made it.
It's all diet.
How are they getting away with that? Well, okay, there we go. I just want to send you a 12-pack of Dr. Pepper now.
Thank you. That's amazing. Just if I ever come over, I'd appreciate if you just have...
You're going to have all the options, Nate. I swear to God, there's just going to be all soda in my fridge. Only soda.
Thank you.
And Big Macs.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. I appreciate your time. I really loved meeting you. You're like my idol. So this has like been really cool for me.
Thank you. I'm a giant fan of you and excited to, thanks for having me and congrats on everything to you. You're doing great.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to my interview with Nate Bargatze. Make sure you check out his latest special, Hello World. And if you like this show, give a rating and a review. It just helps people find us. Okay, thank you. Bye. There's more Funny 'Cause It's True with Lemonada Premium. You'll get access to all of Lemonada's premium content, including My 5 Questions with Nate Bargatze, coming out this Friday. Subscribe now in Apple Podcasts. Funny 'Cause It's True is a Lemonada Media and Powder Keg production. The show is produced by Claire Jones, Zoe Dennis, and Linnea Tony. Our associate producer is Tiffany Bowie. Rachel Neal is our senior director of new content, and our VP of weekly production is Steve Nelson. Executive producers are Stephanie Whittles-Wax, Jessica Cordova-Kramer, Paul Feig, Laura Fisher, Kesla Childers, and me, Elise Myers. This show is mixed by Johnny Vince Evans, additional help from Noah Smith and Ivan Kraev. Our theme song music was written by me and scored by Xander Singh. Follow Funny 'Cause It's True wherever you get your podcasts or listen ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Freedom! Hi, I'm Paul F. Tompkins.
I'm Lauren Lapkus.
I'm Scott Aukerman, and together we make up the show
Freedom!
Freedom is a show where the three of us, who are comedians and also friends, we all just hang out, we tell stories about each other, and about ourselves, usually.
We're constantly telling stories about each other.
You got it, we're Paul did.
And we play games and we laugh a lot. It's just that simple. It's a really easy podcast.
This is a pretty good representation of the show.
It's actually exactly what it is, plus singing.
So listen to it now. The new season's out. Get it wherever you get your podcast.
Just go outside and scream freedom.
Just like we do.
Freedom!